Hey guys, this is Kenan Thompson. I have a problem with you. Yes, you. None of y'all told me that Auto Trader has millions of new and used cars that I can shop from home. I thought we were friends. I put smiles on your face, but I'm not smiling. No one told me that with Auto Trader, a dealer can deliver cars to my home or that I could shop by price on Auto Trader. No one. Consider this friendship that you just learned we had officially over. Finally, it's easy. Auto Trader.
How we doing? Hour number two of our radio program. Mitch Henderson, the head basketball coach at Princeton, back in the NCAA tournament for the first time since 2017. They will match up against Arizona, the Wildcats, in the first round of the NCAA tournament. So Coach will be joining us 20 minutes from now. And then in the next hour, Bruce Pearl from Auburn will join us an hour from now as Auburn is matched up with Iowa in a big 8-9 first round game in Birmingham. And then at 8:40 p.m. Eastern, 5:40 p.m. Pacific, we will be joined by Jim Larranaga, who we all remember, obviously, George Mason, Final Four, now with Miami since 2011, and last year did lead the Hurricanes to the Elite Eight. So Jim Larranaga, fifth seed for Miami, regular season champions in the ACC. They will draw 12th seed Drake coming up at the end of the week. So we'll chat it up with Coach L coming up in about an hour 40 from now. But first up, I got to get into this Lamar Jackson stuff from earlier today. So I've seen this report before, and it's by ESPN, that the Baltimore Ravens in their latest offer, it varies. It's like $230 or $250 million total. But the latest report today was reiterated today by Adam Schefter, is that Lamar Jackson turned down $200 million in guaranteed money back in September. So Lamar, who's representing himself alongside with his mother, but Lamar today tweeted out, it was $133 over 3 years fully guaranteed, but I need an agent. So I interpret that as two different things. Number one, and there's two topics in the number one part, either Lamar would be willing to sign a fully guaranteed deal of $133 million over 3 years, or the Ravens' offer was actually $133 over three, and that's what he turned down. But then there's another side of this where you read the Chris Mortensen and Adam Schefter report, and this is what Schefter said in the article. Mort and I reported on this last September when Lamar Jackson was offered a deal that he turned down, a deal that included at the time he was offered $133 million due at signing, Schefter said. $133 million guaranteed. The contract also had injury guarantees that brought the guarantees to $175 million, and then it had a signing guarantee that could have brought the value of the contract of the guaranteed money to $200 million in guaranteed. And yes, those were the actual numbers, and that was the situation. So those are really the guarantees for Lamar Jackson. So, like, Hickey, that number, and we'll get to what Ian Rappaport said in just a second. We'll play that audio. But that number that is throwing around of $200 million in guaranteed money, isn't that a little bit misleading? If when you go into the details, it says it was $133 million due at signing, and then there's other guarantees with injuries involved that could bring it up to $175, and then other ways that it could get up to $200. Like, that doesn't seem like it's actually $200 million in guaranteed. It's really just that buck $133. So the $133 number, it's all over the place, and Lamar's tweet was vague. We'll play you what Rappaport said in just a second, but, like, I'm now more confused as I was before on this Lamar Jackson situation with the Baltimore Ravens.
I mean, it really doesn't, yeah. I mean, we know the contract that was offered to him, it was basically, it was, like Lamar said, $133 for 3 years guaranteed, and there's some other guarantees, but again, that's also based on him being able to stay healthy and him being on the roster 3 years from now, and how much of a guarantee truly is that? You know, if he's on the roster on the fifth day in 2026, when we're sitting here in 2023. So it's like, technically, the Ravens could say, well, look, it's $200 million guaranteed, but, you know, and you could just ignore that. You got to hit a few stipulations in order to get the quote-unquote guaranteed money in your bank account. But it just goes back to basically the original offer that we all saw of 133 guaranteed, and that's why Lamar Jackson kind of laughed at it.
When Kyler Murray got a $189.5 last year.
Never really a thought to consider signing that.
And also Deshaun Watson got 230 fully guaranteed, which started all this stuff. So this is Ian Rappaport on the NFL Network who says Lamar Jackson's tweet detailed the latest contract offer the Ravens gave him. Listen up.
What Lamar Jackson did was pull back the curtain a little bit and show us what the Ravens have offered. And, you know, we had heard that the Ravens had offered him a fully guaranteed deal. I'd heard that it was a shorter deal. It seems to be not 100% guaranteed, but it seems to be what Lamar Jackson is indicating, that he got a 3-year deal for 133 fully guaranteed for the Ravens. And I know a lot of people thought maybe this would get it done. It obviously did not get it done, more than $44 million per year. And Lamar Jackson decided that he wanted to play on the franchise tag instead.
So what Rappaport is saying is that the Ravens went to him with a 3-year, $133 million deal fully guaranteed. That's how I interpret it. And that's like part of the response when you see in Lamar's tweet where you go, okay, if that's the offer, it makes you rethink things. Now, we've been always told about this number. I forget what it was, either 230 or 250 over 5 years, and then $133 million of it was fully guaranteed. But if the latest offer, if maybe the Ravens were saying, whatever we're offering over 5 years and the guaranteed isn't deemed enough, let's then go shorter years. We're skeptical on the fully guaranteed. Like, you're not going to get 5 years, $230 million fully guaranteed. That's not the road that we're going to go. But we'll give you a very good average annual value when you do the math of a $133 divided by 3, which comes out to what? Like 0.3 million dollars. So I think that's a fair price tag. When you look at it, you get 3 years, $133 million fully guaranteed. But I could understand why Lamar turned it down, because if you do go to, let's say, eventually a 5-year deal, I do think you could truly get $200 million bare minimum guaranteed. I do think you could get a 5-year, $240 whatever million dollar deal with $200 million fully guaranteed by either the Ravens or somewhere else. So I don't think it was an unfair offer by the Ravens. If that was true, they said, let's compromise 3 years, $133 million. And if I'm Lamar, I would maybe be inclined to sign it and bet on myself and say, okay, I'll get a $133 million fully guaranteed. It's my big payday. And then 3 years from now, I'm going to prove the Ravens wrong, and then I'll go get a deal done with either someone else, or I'll really make the Ravens give me what I want 3 years from now. But I could also see on the other side of this, Lamar looking at it and saying, hey, the last 2 years I haven't been healthy. I have the unanimous MVP. If, let's say, the next 2 years I do get injured in back-to-back years, then more of a conversation and a thought process starts to develop that I'm injury prone, and then I move further and further away from that unanimous MVP year, which is probably my biggest negotiation chip. So bottom line, Hickey, we could dissect this until we're blue in the face. These two sides are nowhere close, and there has not been an offer yet that Lamar has said ooh and ah, and actually that he's probably contemplated and accepting by the Baltimore Ravens, fair or not.
If you're Lamar, I don't get why you would turn down $133 for 3.
I'm with you.
$44 basically and a $500,000 a year. And what you're doing also is betting on yourself. He's had no problem, and he's going to play, according to reports, on the franchise tag this year. So he is betting on himself this year. Even though it's still a short-term deal, if he plays through that and plays well, you're then coming out of that contract at age 29, still in your prime, ready to get another big-time deal, kind of like what Dak Prescott is doing when Dak Prescott signed that deal last year and wanted a shorter-term deal because he knew if I play well, I'll get back on the market, get a bigger deal.
He wanted
the
four,
next
the Cowboys
time.
Wanted 5 years.
So it's just like, if you're Lamar, you have no problem betting on yourself now. Why not last year betting yourself, you know, screw the five, 200 or other, just basically look at it as 3 for $133, fully guaranteed. Let's go, you know, give me an opt-out or give me something where I can get back on the market at age 29. And if you're the Ravens, you feel, I would say, better about taking a short-term risk and seeing how Lamar can play in a 3-year period, see if he can stay healthy, compared to a 5 or 6-year deal. So I think it works out for both sides. I don't honestly get why it didn't get done.
No, I'm in full agreement with you, but let me just give you two different viewpoints here. Maybe Lamar still thinks he could get that 5-year deal fully guaranteed, or at least $200 million of it actually fully guaranteed if he just continues to wait? Or is it that crazy to suggest this? Lamar doesn't want to get a deal done with Baltimore. And Lamar probably knows that if they don't get a deal done this offseason, then next year, if you play hardball with the Ravens, that they will then ultimately trade you. Because the Ravens can't allow, or they can't run the risk of Lamar going through 2 years on the franchise tag, and you probably won't franchise tag in the third time around, and then you let him just walk for a compensatory third-round pick, which when you do the math, who even knows what it's going to add up to and what you're actually going to get back. So maybe Lamar, this is showing the side that Lamar is really done with Baltimore and he's agitated with Baltimore, because it does make sense to take the three for a $133, because if you're going to go through this song and dance for 2 years, you may as well just get paid two out of the 3 years and then spend another year in Baltimore. And then, you know, maybe you put a clause in the contract that they can't franchise tag you after that. And then you just walk 3 years from now. But the way that I would interpret the three for 133 is either he still thinks he could get his five-year deal and he's not moving off that and he thinks he'll get the number that he wants, or he's fine with playing this year on the tag and then realizing that most likely Baltimore is going to trade in the next offseason if they don't get a deal done.
And I get that deal was last year. So again, it was before Lamar got hurt again and missed more time at the end of the season again. So now if you're Lamar, I wonder if your thought process changes if you get that offer again, if he would still say no, or if you would actually sign it. Again, I think it benefits him at this point with his age.
Oh, right, because this deal was in September, right?
Right. So fair. It was before, you know, it was before obviously we knew what was going to happen. I think his value has decreased a little bit because now it's 2 years in a row he's been hurt. But if you revisit that, if you're the Ravens or if you're another team, now going forward, I don't see why Lamar Jackson would turn that deal down now.
Yeah. And maybe he saw a lot of this stuff coming before the start of the season. You know, maybe he knew that where the talks were going, because this has been now a song and dance for the last few years. So this is all over the place. Every time I hear about it, it doesn't seem like they are inching anywhere closer to actually getting a deal done. So I will stick by my stance until I'm proven wrong here, that I will believe Lamar Jackson is getting a long-term deal from the Baltimore Ravens when we get the announcement from Eric DaCosta, when we get the announcement from Steve Bisciotti, when we get the announcement from John Harbaugh that we've agreed to terms on a multi-year extension with Lamar Jackson. And the more and more that this continues to go on, and maybe some other team ponies up, and maybe some other team makes a deal and they put the Ravens in a position where they have to match it, or they just let him go for the two first round picks, until a team starts talks to Lamar, and they could start talking tomorrow, but I don't expect any team to talk to him really starting tomorrow. Hickey, the more and more that this is heading down, the more and more we go through this, it looks like Lamar will be in Baltimore this year on the franchise tag until maybe after the draft, a team swoops in that gets desperate. But then this could all end because all the Ravens have to do is either match it or reject the offer. And then you get your two first-round picks back, or you just match it and you let another team do your negotiations for you. So and my gut tells me right now, and maybe my gut will end up being wrong, but my gut tells me right now that next year Lamar Jackson is in Baltimore and he's playing on the franchise tag, and that will be his final year with the Ravens.
I would be very surprised if that's what we see. I think the relationship has run its course. I think there will be a team or two desperate enough come draft time to make an offer for Lamar Jackson. I think his market will be there. I don't think the Ravens are intending to match. I would be surprised if we get either a long-term deal or even having Lamar in Baltimore next year.
Who's the team that matches? Let's just say Rodgers goes to the Jets. Who's then the team? Like, the Raiders just brought in Jimmy Garoppolo. The Saints just brought in Derek Carr. The Panthers just moved in to the number one spot. Like, I'm trying to identify who that team is going to be, and I'm coming up with nothing. Like, the Commanders do make the most sense. And is Daniel Snyder going to do this with the pending sale of his team, or him maybe trying to sell his team? Like, who knows? I don't know. So I look at this, I would love to see a team that makes sense right now and that I actually believe, because there's some teams I think make sense, but I believe that they'll actually do it. potentially.
And on Deshaun Watson last year.
They were.
Not had a quarterback in a while.
No, it's a team that makes sense, but right away they were one of those teams that comes out and says, we're not going to do this. And we don't know how much they were willing to pay for Deshaun Watson, too. All we know is the Browns are willing to go fully guaranteed. We don't know what the Falcons are willing to give Deshaun Watson in terms of a contract. So I think this thing is a major, major mess, and it's all speculation right now. And you get a little juice today with Lamar Jackson throwing out the 3 for $133. All right, we'll take a break. When we come on back, we'll go out to Sacramento. Princeton's getting ready for their first-round NCAA tournament game as a 15-seed, champions of the Ivy League, taking it to Yale over the weekend, and they'll have a date with the Wildcats of Arizona. Mitch Henderson, who played for Princeton, is now their coach, making another trip to the NCAA tournament, will join us next.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
Princeton is back in the NCAA tournament for the first time since 2017. They have a date with the Wildcats of Arizona coming up on Thursday, opening round of the NCAA tournament at 4:10 p.m. Eastern. And now joining us is a man that played for Princeton. He is the head coach of Princeton. I'm very fired up for my next guest, as in the earlier part of my radio career, as I produced and did set up a lot of Mitch Henderson broadcasts, as we did have a few shows on the great campus of Princeton, and that is Coach Mitch Henderson, who's kind enough to join us right now. Coach, I know it's been a while. Congratulations to you and your team, and thanks so much for doing this.
Zach, this is a pleasure to be with you today, and I'm psyched to be here. We just left a little practice. We got to Sacramento last night, and we're just absolutely thrilled to be dancing.
So I know that Yale has been a pain the last few years, and the last time out, it was a heartbreaking one as you guys had a big lead and then weren't able to get the job done. What was the difference this time around in the championship game of the Ivy League tournament?
You know, you learn a lot about yourselves in a place where you have a really difficult loss, and that was a really difficult loss that you just mentioned. We had a gigantic lead, coughed it up. We felt that we had played great basketball for 35 minutes of that game, but then we lost it. And you know, unfortunately, that's the way teams learn. So the human element, Zach, in teams, you can't underestimate it. So we needed to go through something like that. So we learned how to win games and get a little tougher, get a little more resilient, and we did. And I thought we played just great basketball, played our best basketball this season on the weekend, had two great wins over Penn and Yale to get to the tournament.
And I really think in that Yale game, because you had a lead and then it got cut down a little bit and you wonder how your team was going to mentally respond with what happened the last time out against Yale, it never seemed like you guys lost control of the game. And even when momentum could have been shifting, you never let them really overtake that game down the stretch.
Yeah, you know, and that's the players doing it. Unfortunately, Tosan Woman and Ryan Langbord, Matt Alaco, the sort of three guys that have really put us on their back all season. They just said, no, we're going to stay the course. We're going to do what we need to do. And we guarded, you know, a very good team. As you mentioned, Yale's been very good. They have great players. But I was just so thrilled for the guys this is what you want. This is all we put our chips in. We got back-to-back Ivy League titles, but we want to go dancing, and we're happy to be in the tournament.
Mitch Henderson here with us, the head coach of Princeton, champions of the Ivy League. They have Arizona coming up on Thursday. Coach, we've talked about this throughout the years. When you have a freshman and they're playing well, right, they think everything is going to come to them so easily. And then when they have a down moment, it's the sky is caving in on them. I look at Caden Pierce, your player. He's been so big for you guys, and he doesn't appear to be a freshman player for you guys. Why has he been able to be effective, so great right away? And did you expect this production out of him this early on?
No, I did not. We thought he was, we feel pretty good about all of your recruits. We thought he was going to be a very good piece. But instantly, from the very beginning of the season, we realized that he was really good at the small things that you need to, the small and little things that are hard to do. Remembering the scout, you know, hey, we want to go over on this screen. We want to make sure we're influencing this guy this way. And then he was tough. But what you don't realize, and I say this, I realize some people out there, there's a really good freshman, but I think he's one of the best freshmen in the country. He's such a winner, and he makes such big plays and continues over the course of this last weekend to make huge plays. He's, you know, gets two-handed rebounds above the rim. He's at, you know, basically averages a double-double on the weekend. You know, he's just tough. We wouldn't be where we are without him.
Keyshawn Kelman, he looks like he could play defensive end in the National Football League. Offensive rebounding was big down the stretch for you guys. He also took a big charge as well. What does he bring to your program?
You mentioned the charge on Saturday. We really emphasize and try to put a sort of a tactical number on the plays that don't get measured in the stat sheet, charges taken, deflections, loose balls. And Keyshawn just absolutely loves making those plays for his teammates. You're right. I actually thought, you know, he had been struggling just a little, but he was just terrific on the weekend, especially Saturday in the Penn game, which, you know, honestly was equally as hard fought for us to get to the Sunday game. So, you know, you really got to have all of, and we have eight guys that played a lot of minutes, got to have all those pieces coming together. And the guys did it, man. They really came through.
I know how much Coach Pete Carril means to the Princeton program and for you personally. Unfortunately, Coach did pass away in August. I know you're honoring him all throughout the season. What were you thinking about walking out of Jadwin Gymnasium over the weekend as Ivy League champions? I'm sure Coach, obviously, who's been with you mentally all throughout the year, was probably on your mind, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I mean, so much of what comes out of my mouth, I always say this, should be cited. You know, he used to say, like, for free throws, for instance, he would say, hey, these are free points. You got to get every single one of them. And I say it all the time. And when I told the guys one day that that's what Coach used to say, you know, they sort of look at you funny. Because it's, you know, what he did and who he was, you know, Princeton basketball to me. And, you know, now I'm the steward. And I think he used to also say, Zach, that if you're fortunate enough to be playing basketball in March, and especially in New Jersey, and it's still light out when you're leaving the gym, you know, so the days are getting a little bit longer, you know, you're playing in the tournament. And so he'd be really happy for us and really happy that Princeton's in the NCAA. So.
Mitch Henderson, when you look back at that win that Coach Carril was able to have, that you were able to be a part of in the NCAA tournament against UCLA, what are the memories all these years later that still come to mind on that one?
Well, first, today's the day. Today's the anniversary. 27 years ago today. And my memories of that time, it does not feel like 27 years ago. It feels very recent in my head and everybody else's, although we're all much grayer. But he would say, and I remember him saying it distinctly, I'm preparing you to win the game. And he would do things and talk to us about things that were associated with winning, and including when the ball got thrown up in that UCLA game, all five of us ran back on defense. Yeah, I remember him saying to us, don't worry, you're not going to get it, just run back. So, I don't know, you know, this is the magic of the tournament. You need to believe, but you also got to be exactly who you were and who you are that got you to the tournament. Ain't that much. Because, you know, this is why the tournament's the best. It's a reflection of all the good teams.
We've seen the last 2 years, 15 seeds take down 2 seeds in the NCAA tournament. I know you got to have your guys ready to go right out of the gate to be able to put yourself in that position. Do you get a sense right now that your team will be ready to go come Thursday and not afraid or the stage won't be too big for them?
I don't think the stage is too big. I don't think we'll be afraid, although Arizona is huge and they're very well coached and they're great. So I would imagine every 15 seed has looked at the task and said, listen, man, this is going to be hard. And we know it's going to be hard. We know that too. But you got to have fun and tap into that little inner kid, you know, we all the guys and us coaches included, you know, we've seen the upsets and you got to tap into that. But you got to remember, again, like I go back to it, but you got to remember what got you here. And we've been playing tough and hard-nosed defense and finding ways to get, you know, to get loose balls and long rebounds for the last couple of weeks. And we know we're going to have to be really special against Arizona.
You mentioned their size. How do you deal with the size of Arizona?
You know, I don't know. You tell me, I mean, you know, just work as hard as you possibly can and hope that, you know, you get a couple good bounces. You know, they got to guard us too, so we know that we have to take advantage of the strengths that we have in the matchup, but, boy, it's a tough task. I don't know how you stop, and we're going to do our best.
Coach, before we let you run, Mitch Henderson here with us. Princeton goes up against Arizona coming up Thursday at 4:10 p.m. Eastern. Sometimes coaches are a little skeptical to coach at their alma mater just because they never know how it's going to end, and it's a place that obviously they love, and they don't want it to end in a bad way. You've been there since 2011. What has this experience been like for the last decade?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's hard to describe what it's like to work at your alma mater, you know, to many people. And you certainly can't do it to your team. I'm walking around outside here. It's so windy. But the guys, it's not that they don't care about my time, but I just always feel that it's inappropriate. You can't talk about people. So, you internalize that. And then, who wants to hear about glory days with people that are around you? So, it's where I went to school and it's where I played, and I have those memories, but it really makes you stay in the present and focus on what's the most important thing, which is the current team and what they're all about. You want to create the same memories for them that you got to have. So you feel it deeply, Zach. I feel it very deeply. It's a relief when you get to this point, because this is where, in my opinion, where Princeton belongs, which is at the top of the league and in the tournament. So I feel that, and that's where all my efforts go.
Last thing I'll ask you, you've been in the NCAA tournament as a player for Princeton. You've been there as the head coach. I was at that game years ago, which was a thrilling game up against Notre Dame. How do the emotions compare and contrast, you being the head coach and then also when you played at Princeton?
As a player, it's all new, and it's a little, it's shiny and fun. And as a coach, I really, this time around at least, really enjoying it, trying to take it all in and appreciating what got us here. And, 2 weeks ago, as you mentioned, 3 weeks ago, we were in a real low point. So you got to enjoy these kind of moments. And we're soaking it all in out here in Sacramento and really excited about Thursday.
Well, enjoy it. I'm happy for you. I'm happy for your kids. Also happy for all the staff at Princeton. Good luck, and surprise some people coming up on Thursday.
All right, Zach, I appreciate that. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
You got it. There's Mitch Henderson, the head coach of the Princeton Tigers. And we've had a relationship back to my first job out of college, actually. I was at a radio station in the Princeton area, and I came up with an idea to form the Mitch Henderson radio show on our station to try to make some money and get us out to a bar. And also have Bob Cerace, the football coach. So good to see those guys having some success and winning the Ivy League tournament and getting into the big dance. And they have a fun team, and we'll see how they're going to fare up against Arizona. And that's going to be their toughest challenge. It's just going to be the size of Arizona and how they deal with it. And they're going to have to be on from three. And we'll see if they could connect from three and give Arizona a little bit of a scare in the first round of the NCAA tournament. All righty, it is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We will take a break. When we come on back, we will update you on the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio. We call that segment the News Brief. Still to come at the top of the hour, about 30 minutes from now, Bruce Pearl will be stopping by. And then in a little over an hour from now, an hour 10, we'll be joined with Jim Larranaga, the head coach of Miami.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
We will get to a news brief in just a second. But first, there's not a ton of great wide receivers available this offseason. Like, Alan Lazard's not a great wide receiver. He's going to the Jets reportedly on a new deal. Pays about $11 million a year. Jacoby Myers, 3 years, $33 million. Today signs with the Raiders. And then Darren Waller gets traded to the New York Giants for a third-round pick. So I don't think I wouldn't say there's one great wide receiver that's available to be signed this offseason. But someone who has been dominant in the league before, he's getting up there in age, and Adam Thielen, he is now made available. And with the new league year starting tomorrow, and I know the legal tampering is already underway going back to Monday, there is one team that is having a meeting tomorrow with Adam Thielen, Hickey. Can you guess who that team is going to be?
Is it the Kansas City Chiefs?
That has been rumored. It is not the Kansas City Chiefs. I'll give you one more guess, and then I'll give you a hint. So not Kansas City.
blind shot in the dark. Is it the New England Patriots who need wide receiver help?
Good guess, but no. It is not an AFC team. It is an NFC team.
NFC team. Oh, is it the Carolina Panthers who now need a new wide receiver one?
Ding, 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 ding. It is the Carolina Panthers. According to Rap Sheet, Ian Rappaport, this is interesting. That is what Ian Rappaport said. The Panthers are expected to host former Vikings wide receiver Adam Thielen on a visit tomorrow. The veteran has plenty left, and Carolina will get the first look. Now, just because he's going to Carolina first doesn't mean that he's going to sign there. But with that being said, if you're going to Carolina, and we all know, even though like you kind of view Adam Thielen as an unselfish player and the guy that puts in the ultimate work and all that, yes, he loved his time with Justin Jefferson, loved his time playing in Minnesota. KJ Osborne was getting more of a role there. We know Thielen is still very productive, but maybe he wants more number one wide receiver reps, and you go to a team like Carolina that, who do they really have at wide receiver? Laviska Shenault right now? It is not like the Panthers are this tremendous option in terms of talent on the roster that you look at and you go, oh, wow, I can't be the number one guy there. So maybe he ends up signing with the Panthers and he gets put in that number one wide receiver role again, which he was for a while in Minnesota until you did have really Justin Jefferson come onto the scene. But that's bizarre. Like, I understand the approach by Thielen because you get probably more money that way and you can have a team that's more desperate in Carolina. But I don't think Adam Thielen, with his age, is the number one wide receiver anymore in this league. He's more a number two wide receiver and a complimentary piece to what is a very good or great wide receiver in this league.
I would argue if you are the Panthers, he's maybe right now the best option you could get considering the free agent market's not great. And obviously you just gave a ton of draft capital up to move. So it's not like you are in, let's say, the DeAndre Hopkins sweepstakes for the most part, unless it's cheaper than we think.
And he's the ultimate pro. So if you bring in a young quarterback, and I know Andy Dalton did just sign in Carolina today. So maybe Andy Dalton starting early in the season, they do this stupid delay until they hand the baton over to C.J. Stroud, Bryce Young, whoever the quarterback is going to be, kind of like what Pittsburgh just did this past year with the pointless time of putting Mitch Trubisky under center. Also, if there are some growing pains with the young quarterback, I don't think Adam Thielen is going to throw his quarterback under the bus like maybe some other wide receivers would.
I would agree with that. Now, you know the question is going to be asked to Frank Reich, to Scott Fitterer, to even if you're meeting with David Tepper. What quarterback you taking? What answer think he's going to get? I don't know. We like do you? Let's just say the Panthers like two guys.
I don't know if Adam Thielen asked that question. Like, does that definitely come up?
But don't you want to know who you're going to
draft the quarterback
from?
We're still evaluating our process. I'm not going to tell Adam Thielen. If that's really going to be the deal breaker, we're going to take either Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud.
But do you tell him, if you're between two, do you tell him who you're between? Do you keep everything a secret? And, hey, look, we're going to get a quarterback you're going to like. We're between, you said Stroud and Young. Okay. That's who we're deciding with. What do you do there?
So let's say you're Thielen. I'm Scott Fitterer or Frank Reich. You asked me that question.
Coach, who am I going to be catching passes from next
year? We're going to take either Anthony Richardson. We're going to take either Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud. We're not all in on Will Levis. But it could be Andy Dalton starting week one. One of those four options will be your starting quarterback.
Jeez.
That's my answer.
Really narrowed it down.
But why did I tell Adam Thielen that? Just in case if you don't sign Adam Thielen, and then the next thing you know, Adam Thielen goes and runs his mouth and tells you that, oh, they're definitely taking C.J. Stroud, and maybe they're trying to put on the front that it's someone else and try to get someone to trade up so they move back a spot. Like, I don't think that's going to happen. I do believe the Panthers know that they're staying in the number one spot and they're taking a quarterback. I do believe that. I don't think they have to tell everyone, though, who they're taking yet. But I do think they know. I don't buy this nonsense that they haven't made up their mind.
Well, I guess the one I'm not sure if they made up their mind. So I guess if they haven't, what else are you going to say? Like, we're between these two or three guys.
Or let me rephrase that. Maybe Scott Fitterer and Frank Reich know who they want to take, and David Tepper's being a pain in the ass and trying to micromanage and get them to take somewhere else.
But I guess what's the point? What's the secrecy, I guess, then? If you have, you don't have to worry about anyone jumping you. Like, no one's going to move up above you to take whatever quarterback you like.
You know how paranoid these teams are.
I get it, but there's really They have no, like, there's nothing anyone else could possibly do.
But they don't need to make that announcement public now.
If you like CJ, but I'm just saying, you don't have to make it public also, now, but you can tell Adam Thielen.
As good of a player Adam Thielen is, he is not a must-have player for the Carolina Panthers where you need to tell him what you're doing at the quarterback position.
Adam, don't worry about it. Sit your ass down. You'll get a guy that we think will be good enough for you. Don't worry about it.
Well, here's what you do. We'll pay you $3 to $5 more million than any other team would do. Shut your mouth and sign the contract or take a hike.
Add me. I cut for a reason. We're giving you wide receiver one opportunities. Don't ask us any questions about the quarterback.
All right. Let's update you on the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio. We get to the news brief.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
Rodgers officially has not made a decision yet, but I do believe that he's going to the Jets. His demands have been leaked by Diana Rossini, the Rodgers writers, some ayahuasca, little darkness caves, Fireman Ed, chanting, go Jets, go. But the actual writers are Randall Cobb, Alan Lazard, Mercedes Lewis, and Odell Beckham Jr. Lazard already reportedly signing a deal with the New York Jets when the new league year does officially get underway tomorrow. We'll see what happens with Cobb, Mercedes Lewis, and Odell Beckham Jr. But Jordan Schultz was on the Pat McAfee show, which, by the way, Aaron Rodgers will be appearing on tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern. And Jordan Schultz did talk about which team fits Odell Beckham Jr. perfectly.
Buffalo, to me, out of all those teams we just talked about, makes the most sense. I know they have Gabe Davis. Obviously, Diggs is there. But if you add a healthy Odell Beckham, that offense gets a lot more exciting. So, to me, Buffalo would be the most enticing if I'm just thinking as a fan.
I like the Buffalo suggestion, but I think Rodgers would look at a place like the Jets more intriguing just because in Odell's mind, I still think he could say he's the biggest commodity, where if you go to Buffalo, Stephon Diggs is the biggest commodity, where even though you have the reigning offensive rookie of the year, guys like Garrett Wilson and Elijah Moore will look up to Odell Beckham, where I don't think Stephon Diggs is doing that in Buffalo. So I think the Jets actually do make sense if Rodgers is there for Odell Beckham to go back to MetLife Stadium, except play with the Jets and not the Giants. Ian Rappaport says Lamar Jackson's tweet, which said 3 years, $133 million, it did detail the latest contract offer the Ravens gave him, NFL Network.
What Lamar Jackson did was pull back the curtain a little bit and show us what the Ravens have offered. And, you know, we had heard that the Ravens had offered him a fully guaranteed deal. I'd heard that it was a shorter deal. It seems to be not 100% guaranteed, but it seems to be what Lamar Jackson is indicating, that he got a 3 year deal for $133 million fully guaranteed for the Ravens. And I know a lot of people thought maybe this would get it done. It obviously did not get it done, more than $44 million per year. And Lamar Jackson decided that he wanted to play on the franchise tag instead.
So more chaos, more confusion when it comes to the Ravens and Lamar Jackson, and nowhere close to actually getting the final destination on what's going to happen with Lamar. Let's go to Mickey Loomis of the Saints on what he loved about Derek Carr, this courtesy of our friends at SiriusXM NFL Radio.
You know, whenever you have an opportunity to get a player that you like, that your staff likes, or offensive coaches like, he fits the type of offense that we like to play. And look, I get that it didn't, it didn't end well, or it didn't end the way that Derek wanted to in Las Vegas, but we did pretty well with the last quarterback that we got from a team, San Diego, some years ago, and hopefully this one will turn out the same way.
If I'm a Saints fan, that's not the response that I want to hear. Oh, well, we had success with Drew Brees, so we'll find a way for it to work with Derek Carr. Does anyone think that Derek Carr is even going to be 75% of what Drew Brees is? We've seen Derek Carr now for a decade. Anytime he looks like he's going to be a top 10 quarterback, he falls flat on his face, and then his brother makes a bunch of excuses for him.
There is one person answer a question who does think that Derek Carr could be 75% at least of Drew Brees.
David Carr?
Robert Saleh or Joe Douglas, in the Jets said, you're going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
I don't want to curse like you, but bull bleep, okay?
Because someone said it.
They said, Carr, go walk, go march in with the Saints. We'll wait for Aaron Rodgers to come out of his darkness cave and make a decision. Patrick Peterson on why he's signing with the Steelers on the All Things Covered podcast, his podcast, along with our pal, Bryant McFadden.
My plan is to take my talents to the steel curtain, man. I'm going to take it to the terrible towels, man. I always, obviously, grew up watching all the greats there. You went to Super Bowls there. Obviously, love Coach Tomlin and what he brings to the table. And just how consistent he is, how consistent the defense is, how consistent his team is year in and year out.
I think it's a fine move. I'm actually optimistic on the Steelers headed into this year. I like what they have with Pickens. I like what they have with Kenny Pickett. Najee Harris is a solid player. You know, offensive line could obviously get better. They have a really good defense. I'm not telling you it's a lock, but I do think the Steelers can make the playoffs this year.
They have good skill pieces. The one thing that's concerning, though, is you hear it unanimously. Matt Canada. Everyone hates him.
Oh, yeah, he stinks.
Bad OC. You got a bad guy not calling plays. That's not good.
Yeah, he does stink. All right, let's get to the end of this game last night between the Bucks and the Kings. So when I was watching it, Trey Lyles and Giannis had a little dust-up, and then Brook Lopez came in and finished it. Here's Mike Budenholzer, who says he hates the way that the game ended.
Just unfortunate. You know, I think it was a great game. A lot of good things happened. And so, you know, impressed by Sacramento and the way they played. And, you know, good for our guys to fight back in the second half. And I'm really not going to say anything about what didn't happen. It was just, to me, it was unfortunate.
I loved it. We almost saw a fight in the NBA, and it wasn't a hold-me-back situation. Because when Lyles puts his hand on Brook Lopez's throat, Brook Lopez just walked right through it. That was great. We don't usually get excitement in the NBA regular season. Because a lot of times players don't care in the regular season. I thought it was great the other night when Dylan Brooks and Draymond Green were going at it. Now you get Trey Lyles and Giannis and Brook Lopez going at it. We need more of that in the NBA. We need a little fire, a little excitement, a little care from these players. Usually all they care about is load management and not really giving our ass into the playoffs. I love that. Good battle between the Kings and the Bucks last night. That was fun. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come on back. Bruce Pearl will join us. Jim Larranaga going to stop by 45 minutes from now as well. Auburn to Miami talk in hour number 3.